Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's edition of The Hula Hoax. Did you know there were no gas chambers in Germany, that 6 million did not die, and that the final solution was not a plan to exterminate the Jews, but just to get them out of Germany? Yes, indeed. All of these stories about the Jew skin lampshade, the pure Jew fat soap, the gas chambers, the Mengelian experiments, is one grand piece of communist propaganda used in step two of the Jewish plan to exterminate the white race. Step one was the takeover in Russia when 65 million white Christians were murdered in their beds by Jewish Bolsheviks. And the lie was kept secret behind the Iron Curtain until the Berlin Wall finally fell and our scholars were able to get into the archives and find out the truth. Step two was getting America and England to fight against the Christian Germans, who were valiantly struggling against the communists, making America an ally with the communists, so that now we are infected with communists, and we are the third target of these communists. The cost to the white race has been enormous. Whereas in the 50s, the white race comprised 20% of the world's population, today our numbers are down to 8%.
I've a very strange feeling I ne'er had before. 'Tis a kind of a grind of depression. My heart's acting strangely, it feels rather sore. At least it gives me that impression.
I'm losing all relish for things that were dear. I'm looking for trouble and know it. When someone is near, I'm feeling quite queer. But I heartily hope I don't show it. For I'm falling in love with someone, girl. I'm falling in love with someone, hey.
Yes, I'm falling in love with someone plain to see.
I'm sure I could love someone madly if someone someone would only love me.
For I'm falling in love with someone, someone more. I'm falling in love with someone. Oh, what joy.
For I'm falling
to understand Christianity, you have to understand that Christ found himself born into a group of people who were worshiping Satan. He saw this and he tried to help them understand a better way to live. He told them, God is not pleased by the shrieking cries of your sacrificial victims. Jews, stop it. That's what Christianity was. It was applicable only to a degraded group of mongrels like the Jews who had to be taught, which most people just know intuitively, that God is love. And they couldn't tolerate it, and to this day they can't tolerate it, and are still sacrificing chickens on altars and torturing their animals before they eat them through this inhumane practice of kosher killing. That is who Christ was. He was looking at all of these subhuman, filthy, savage beasts tearing each other apart, tearing their animals apart, and thinking that this was what pleased God. So he said, this is wrong. You're supposed to be nice to each other. And all hell broke loose in Israel. What were the Jews to do? They wouldn't be able to go on. They've got to have their victims. They're total control freaks. And circumcision, another wonderful practice of the Jews, which they not only practice to this day, but they've got our medical hospitals doing it to us good guys. They cut off the foreskin of the penis from the child when he's 8 days old without an anesthetic. How's that for welcoming you into the fold? This is how inhumane and filthy these people were. They were just barely one step up from the sub-Saharan Negro, who is a cannibal and practices not only circumcision, but the black people actually carve out the clitoris from the female baby. This is how low the human race can go. The Jew is just one step above the bottom of the barrel. And Jesus was begging them to stop it. So, of course, they had to hang him on the cross. And then St. Paul, who was not going to allow the word to get out, which was that you'd do better in life if you'd be halfway decent. I mean, that's all Christianity teaches. Your life will be better if you will be halfway courteous. That is the great message of Christianity. And the great leap of faith is that you can ever believe that your fortunes will improve if you stop hacking your neighbor to death. Most people are so lacking in frontal lobes, they can't understand putting off momentary pleasure for future gain. That's all Christianity is. It's a religion of reason and logic. Well, St. Paul wasn't going to let that happen, so he instituted today's Judeo-Christianity, which is a mystery school, and says just the opposite of what Jesus said. Jesus said your life will be better if you think and act in a square, straight manner. The mystery school of Judeo-Christians say, you can't understand the great mystery of what Christ has taught me on my soul, on my heart. I feel so sorry for you, unbeliever, too bad, pathetic one, that you can't grasp the ungraspable. Another thing you have to remember about Jesus when you're trying to understand Christianity, the religion of the Jews is the product of paranoid schizophrenic people with delusions of grandeur. The Jews had actually made a god out of the psychotic voices that came to them in their schizophrenic reveries, which told them to go and kill all the Amalekites, or go and kill all the Amorites, or go and kill all these other people. And then they would follow the dictates of these voices, and when they won these wars that they would start at the behest of these psychotic voices, they would tell people that God had spoken to them and had rewarded them with a wonderful win. One of their three most sacred holidays is the festival of Purim, P-U-R-I-M, in which they celebrate to this day an event when they went out and killed a whole bunch of people and won a war because God told them to go and commit genocide. This is completely psychotic. As I said, they made a god out of the auditory hallucinations that they hear all the time because they're so mongrelized that they've opened up the genetic gates to over 200 genetically specific diseases that only Jews get, most of which are mental and neurological in nature. So they literally worship the auditory hallucinations that tell them to go and commit atrocities. Jesus was trying to pull them out of that and get them to get sane. These Jews, for 2,000 years, have been considered by Christians as being satanic, demon-possessed, demons from hell. But I say they're just congenitally damaged by all of the mongrelizing they've indulged in. They are a race of insane people. That's why so much of Jesus' work had to do with curing psychosomatic illnesses. They were a deranged people who worshipped Satan, sacrificed their own children to God, to this day practice animal sacrifice in the form of kosher killing, and in an environment like this, they developed many psychosomatic illnesses because they were all insane. They were very similar in that respect to the sub-Saharan Negro tribes who practiced voodoo, honoring their satanic god by sacrificing victims and casting spells on one another. These spells actually took effect, not because there was any power in the spell, but because they were so vulnerable to psychosomatic illnesses. All you had to do was suggest to someone in your tribe that they would go lame because you had the power to make it so, and voila, they would go lame. It was this type of psychosomatic illness that Jesus cured all the time because they were all around him. This is what happens in a congenitally defective society like the Jews who pray to the devil. They develop an environment that promotes psychosomatic diseases, which can be easily cured by an honest, direct man like Jesus, who would simply look at you in the eye and say, "Cut the crap," and you would be healed because he would have stopped you from doing it to you. Can you imagine going into a nut house and telling people to stop listening to their auditory hallucinations? A whole big nut house full of criminally insane people. What do you think would happen to you? Do you think maybe you would end up on a cross? Christianity has absolutely nothing in common with Judaism. Christianity is the opposite of Judaism. Judaism is a Satan-worshipping cult which deifies auditory hallucinations that emanate from a criminally insane mind. Jesus said, God is love. God is not your psychotic, bloodthirsty auditory hallucinations. There's no similarity between worshiping a God of love and reason and worshiping criminally insane auditory hallucinations. The only thing they have in common is that they have nothing in common. One was pure evil, that was Judaism, worshiping the devil, and the other was its opposite. That's the only way you can connect the two religions. Christianity is the opposite of Judaism. Christianity teaches not to listen to the voices in your head, that God does not talk to you out loud, that if you think God is talking to you out loud, you're in trouble. You're supposed to use reason, logic, and love when you're a Christian, not accept the commandments of an insane voice that tells you to go and commit genocide. The thing about circumcision in Judaism relates to it being a matriarchy. What you have to understand is that the Jewish woman couldn't control themselves sexually, so there was no way of tracing a child's lineage through the father, as we do in the patriarchal white race. The only way they could be sure of the bloodline of the child, because of the sexual profligacy of the Jews, was by taking the lineage down through the mother, which gave the woman authority over the man in the household. Once you gave the woman authority over the man, she was going to do anything she wanted to do to her male children to make them compliant and obedient. And she learned that if you cut a piece of the penis off when he's only 8 days old without benefit of an anesthetic, and then add to the mix a little bit of child molestation, which the muhel does, the mohel, that's the name of the rabbi that cuts the skin of the foreskin off of the baby, which hurts probably about as much as if somebody cut your lip off. Then the mohel fills his mouth with wine, and he puts his lips around the baby's penis while it's screaming its guts out in pain, and sloshes the wine around the wounded penis with his tongue. Now, that was what the Jewess figured out to make her male babies compliant. And it has had an amazing effect on the Jewish male, whom we all know is the biggest wimp that the human race has ever produced. In order to understand Jesus, you have to understand that he was trying to teach nomadic people who had no capacity for dealing fairly with their neighbors that it wasn't enough just to be fair to each other. He was trying to get the Jews to give up their Talmudic teachings that say it's not good to steal from other Jews, but it's good to go out and steal from the people around you. This was central to Jesus' teachings that he was trying to deliver to the Jews. He was trying to get them out of their clannish way and get them to see that if they wanted to prosper in the world, not just their little nomadic community, but be able to communicate with the city people in Sumeria and Egypt, they would have to learn how to be ethical with people other than themselves. But of course, they strung him up for that, and they have never learned that either. To this day, the Jew plays fair with himself and unfair to everybody else outside of his clan. That's why in America, even though only 2% of Americans are Jews, they enjoy over 70% of positions of influence and power. Because a Jew will always do a favor for a Jew, even if it means committing a crime against a non-Jew. That's the kind of people they are, and that's what Jesus was trying to explain to them, that if they would get out of that, maybe they could be accepted. But they never have, and they never will. So we're in a situation now where the Jew is one more time going to be kicked out of a country, in this case America, which will be the 91st time they've been kicked out of a white country, because they always get kicked out. They always do exactly what they're doing to us. They get in, they cheat the host country, they give special favors to each other, people get onto them and they kick them out. So where is the Jew to go? Nowhere. He's probably going to have to go back to Israel. 1.5 billion Arabs are going to drive 7 million Jews into the sea, and that'll be the end of the Jew, because he has never learned what Jesus was trying so hard to teach them. To be honest to the people they did business dealings with outside of their tribe, not to worship a God that rewards you for sacrificing and torturing animals, not to torture and torment your children through circumcision and flagellation, and they have never learned these things. They did not listen to their Messiah, and they are now going to be damned to total extermination. The only way 2% minority could get in control of over 70% of America's positions of power would be through criminal acts. There is absolutely no other explanation. Even if Jews were four times more intelligent than any other race and could produce four times the gifted people than the next most gifted race, they would still only be able to get 4 times 2, which is 8% of the positions of influence and power. They have over 70% of the positions of influence and power. That is proof right there that they have cheated their way into controlling our government. And as if that weren't enough evidence, all you have to do is look at the other countries they've been in to see that 90 times they've tried to pull it off just as they're trying to pull it off here. The Jew spots a white country, a plump, beautiful, orderly society, sneaks in, grows a beard to hide his ugly facial appearance, learns how to talk like a white man, and starts leeching off the society. That's what they've always done, and that's what they're doing here. That's why we're now going to war against their enemy, not ours, which is Iraq, emptying our treasury of $200 billion and spilling the lifeblood of our sons and daughters on foreign soil. Because for the 91st time, Jews have gotten in control of a beautiful white society and are sucking its guts out. Now, as for Russia, any white Russian will tell you that 65 million white Christian Russians were murdered in their beds by the Jewish Bolsheviks, and that because the Jews control American media, Americans have never learned this fact, but it is coming out. And when the truth comes out that there was no Russian Revolution, but that it was a planned invasion of Jews backed by American Jewish money, that's when the shit is going to hit the fan. And the Jew will really be put in his place, because we will now recognize our arch enemy, the communist, and the Jew, the saint-like humanitarian Jew, is the one and the same. And that should clinch it for Americans, and that should be enough to get the Americans, to get the Jews out of America. The communist regime was probably the most oppressive regime that's ever thrived on the face of the planet, and its emanations are still oppressing many, many people, including Americans. Under the Jewish Bolshevik Revolution, people by the millions were thrown into the gulags, killed on their own farms with guns pointed to their heads, execution style. Farmers were crucified, nailed to their own barn doors by these low-level Jews that came up from Khazaria and bonded with the criminal element in Russia. They put on black pants and black leather jackets and went into the police stations and just shot the policemen and took over. And they were absolutely horrible people, the worst tyrants that the world has ever seen, these Jewish Bolsheviks. The first thing they did after they assassinated the Tsar was take all of the real estate, the private property, out of the hands of the landowners, and they did that by just going to the farms and shooting the owners. 30 million property owners were killed in this way in Russia after the assassination of the Tsar. Then these Jews, who were attempting to exterminate the white race, starting with Russia, and they did a gosh darn good first step of it too, purposely starved the Ukrainians. Another 10 million Ukrainians died because the people in charge, these Jews that were in charge of Russia, purposely starved them out. Then Stalin got into power, and he tried to equalize things a little bit by purging the Communist Party of Jews, which had up until that time been over 50% Jew, with the second language in the Communist Party being Yiddish. At the very top of the scale, The Politburo was 95% Jews. Stalin was trying to change that, so he tried to purge the Communist Party of Jews, but he wasn't really able to do a very good job of it, and he killed another 20 million dissidents, just being a horrible tyrant that he was. The total figure comes to 65 million Russians that were killed by the Jewish Bolsheviks, mostly Christian, white Christian Russians. Now let's take a look at what the Jewish Bolsheviks did after they decimated the Russian population by taking over that country. They then prevailed on America and England, who were controlled by Jews, to fight against Hitler, who was trying to put a stop to communism coming into Christendom, which was Germany and its environs. Hitler stood up to the atheistic Jewish communists and said, "Take your bloodbath and stay out of Germany." But we all know that the Russians prevailed on the Americans and the English to fight beside them, and so we allied ourselves with the communists, and we fought against the Christians, the Germans, and defeated them temporarily. That put us in a pact with the devil, for which we're paying now, because then the Jews got in control of our media, as they had attempted to get in control of Germany's media, and inundated us with Jewish propaganda, so that today we all believe that Jews are saint-like humanitarians and white men are the devil. Now we've got our country in such serious straits that we find ourselves being attacked by Jews on 9/11 and then willingly accepting the harness of Israeli Zionism around our military, which is then sent into the Middle East to fight the war for the Jews. Our treasury is emptied of $200 billion, and our sons and daughters are spilling their blood on foreign soil for the Jew. Now that's oppression, and that's what worldwide communism has done to the planet, and that's why we have to throw off the shackles of the communist Jew and go back to being normal again.
You can say your lips are not for me, but you can't hide the kiss that's in your eyes. And you can say my arms would only leave you cold, but wait till they hold you and then look wide. Yes, and you can say tonight will come and go without a single moment's worth of sighs. But why should I agree when I know what will be? It's plain to me, plain as the kiss in your eyes.
To understand the Jew, you have to do a little study into the mind of the criminally insane, paranoid schizophrenic with delusions of grandeur. This is a people who believe that God speaks to them out loud and gives them orders to commit genocide. Because they consider themselves the chosen people, you can see that they also have delusions of grandeur. Now, take into consideration their victim complex. This is also found among paranoid schizophrenics. They can't get along anywhere, so they feel everyone is beating on them. Well, of course they can't get along. They're delusional, they're grandiose, they think they're better than they are, and they listen to voices in their head that tell them to commit atrocious crimes. Among these atrocious crimes, which include genocide and torture and raping children and flagellating children, is their concept of the place of deceit in their everyday life. Jesus tried so hard to teach the Jews to be as honest to the people that surrounded them, their tribe, as they were among themselves, but they never got it figured out. And to this day, It is part of their Talmudic belief system that it's a good thing to lie, cheat, and steal. So what comes out of Israel regarding the Palestinian situation is pure deceit. They lie when they say the Palestinians are at fault. The truth is, the Jews are at fault. They lied about the gas chambers in order to get Israel instated. They promised if they would be given Israel, they would not expand, and they've already expanded their territory by 3 times what they were originally given. Now they're going for the last 25% of the land that belongs to the Arabs. They've used torture, they've used terror, they've used attack, gassing, military. They even tried to sink the USS Liberty when we were surveilling them, stealing the Golan Heights, and shooting 1,000 Arabs in the desert, execution style, which is a crime against humanity. The Jews are paranoid schizophrenics with delusions of grandeur. They are cowards to the nth degree, which is why they're so comfortable beating up these poor Palestinians with American weapons while the Palestinians have no weapons. The problem is that America has been dragged into this horrible struggle, and we now are acting the part of the coward. We therefore must leave Iraq. We must turn our attention to Israel and dismantle Israel of the 400 nuclear weapons that Israel illegally manufactured with American money, American know-how, and American nuclear material. There's nothing wrong with the word nigger. Nigger is what we called Negroes for 200 years. It comes from the Niger River. When the Jews captured the slaves in the Niger River area, they brought them across in Jewish slave ships and convinced white people, a lie, that Negroes could be used for labor, which was not true. The Negroes not intelligent enough or self-disciplined enough to be used for labor. But the Jews, being crooks and mischievous, thought it was a good idea to mix blacks with whites by perpetrating this lie that Negroes would be good workers in the field. Now, the Jew had a hidden agenda here. The Jew, being the most mongrelized group in the face of the earth and having lost their soul and being rendered insane by congenital diseases, like to mix the races so that the other people will be as mongrelized as they are. But the word nigger, it has no bad meaning except that it means inferior. And in fact, the Negroes are inferior. Until the Negro accepts his inferiority, he's going to continue to rail against the white man and say, stop calling me a nigger. Stop pointing to my inferiority. And it's getting very tiresome. First we called them niggers, then they said we had to call them Negroes, then they said we had to call them blacks, then it was African America, then it was people of color. Well, it's all getting so tedious that we finally have come to a solution. The United Nations is now promoting the idea that there is a word for the Negro race that will be accepted for the rest of time, and that word is, you'll like the sound of this because it's a pretty French word, Moulinion. So now we call the Negro the Moulinion, and for short, in casual conversation, you can now refer to the Negro as Mouli. But you must not continue to castigate white people for not knowing how to address Negroes, because you, the Negroes, are constantly trying to change your identity and change the word that's appropriate for you. And we're not going to continue to have our speech messed with. So the permanent name will now be Moulinion or Mouli. And the Negro is just going to have to accept his inferiority. We can't get rid of it. We can't equalize you, no matter how much money we spend on you. You're just going to have to stop hating us for the fact that you are inferior. I think that it's a very good question that the blacks ask the whites. Remember, the blacks are not very intelligent, and they have the right to ask us questions. The black says to the white man, why do you not love me? Why do you white people love white people instead of loving black people? And I think it deserves an answer, a reasonable answer. The bluebird loves to be with bluebirds. He does not fly with redbirds. That's the natural law. It's written on the genetic code of every human being to love their own kind. So naturally, white people love their own kind. We understand that since the Jew introduced the black man into white man's society, the black man naturally wants to enjoy the fruits of the white man's labor, because the white man is vastly superior to the black man. While the black man was living in mud huts, pissing and shitting in his streams, cannibalizing one another, worshiping the devil, casting voodoo spells on each other, with no language and no wheel having been invented, the white man was living in churches, museums, and castles. I mean, obviously, if you come from a mud hut where you have to live with the fear of being cannibalized or eaten by a tiger, you're going to want to live in a society where there are castles, museums, and churches. We understand that. And graciously, the white man did not send the black man back to Africa after the Civil War, which he should have, but allowed the black man to stay in his beautiful white man's paradise. What we've learned over the last 100 years is that the black man is not happy here. He's constantly whining, complaining, threatening, burning down our neighborhoods, demanding reparations, and I really believe the only answer is complete separation. I am willing to offer $100,000 to any black man who's willing to give up his American citizenship and go to Africa. Not me, myself, personally, but a plank of my campaign is that our government should offer $100,000 to every black person, starting with the prisoners. We have 2 million prisoners in our prison system, over 1 million of which are blacks. They cost us $30,000 a year. If we gave every black prisoner the opportunity to go to Africa, giving up his American citizenship in exchange for $100,000, we'd be making a lot of money in the long run. The black man has a lot to learn from the white man. The way America was started was a bunch of criminals were sent over to the colonies. They were kicked out of England, and they set up colonies. They did the hard labor of killing off the Indians and chopping down the trees and building some buildings. That was the first wave of Americans that came over to North America. After that, some middle-class Americans came who were bright-spirited and had a pioneering spirit, and then they sort of filled out some of the gaps that the criminal element weren't able to fill in. There were a lot of religious people who wanted to exercise freedom of religion, and they added a nice quality to the mix. You could call them sort of in between middle class and upper class. And finally, in the 1700s, the upper crust of England got attracted. They looked at this developing nation and they said, what a wonderful place to create the perfect society for the white man. And those were our founding fathers. They wrote the Constitution, the supporting documents, and they created a brave new society that was perfect for white people. We thrived with our picket fences, our German apple pie, and our hot dogs. This was a perfect place for white people because of the way it developed. It was colonized first by hardworking criminals who had nowhere else to go, then the middle class, and finally the upper class. I suggest we do the same thing for Africa. Send the criminals over to Africa first with enough money, an infrastructure, and a military to subdue the hostile African blacks that are presently destroying the area. Then the middle class will be attracted, and finally the upper class black intellectual will go over there and create the perfect brave new world for the black race. What's wrong with being a racist? It's the Jews that have convinced the black people that it's wrong to be a racist. A racist is nothing more than a person who believes that the races should not mix, but should retain their integrity as races. The only people who want the races to be destroyed are the mongrels. The Jews are the most mongrelized people on the face of the earth. They're constantly trying to convince people that it's a good idea for the races to lie down and die by miscegenating with one another, condemning their children to live lives as mongrels, Klingon monsters, instead of decent, well-constructed beings like God intended, the black man to look like the black man, the white man to look like the white man. There's nothing wrong with races, and there's nothing wrong with being a racist. In fact, the truth is, every single religion has as part of its philosophy a prohibition against miscegenation. That's because the religions were brought up and born into pure races. You have to have a pure racial construction in order to have a conscience, a soul, a sense of integrity. So, of course, the mongrels have no religion. Religion is for people with souls, racial cohesiveness, racial integrity. Now, I understand that black people are not very bright, and they're easily convinced by Jews that racism is wrong. But I think we can just as easily convince them that racism is right, because they stand to lose just as much as the white man stands to lose if the mandate against racism is followed worldwide and everyone is forced to miscegenate, integrate, and destroy their racial pride, their racial identity. I would suggest that the black man stop listening to the Jew and start listening to the white man.
We've played the game of stay away, but it costs more than I can pay. Without you, I can't make my way. I surrender, dear. I may seem proud, and I may act gay. It's just a pose. I'm not that way. 'Cause deep down in my heart I say, I surrender, dear. Little mean things we were doing must have been part of the game. Lending a spice to the wooing. Oh, but I don't care who's to blame. When stars appear and shadows fall, why then you'll hear my poor heart call to you, my love, my life, my all. I surrender,
started out in England as a group of masons, bricklayers, who wanted to be independent of the king, and so they built up a union where every mason had to help out every other mason, and they kept the standards of the bricklayers' union, which is what they started out as, being high enough so that they could make sure that everybody paid them good money, and they prospered that way. They came over to America and became extremely prosperous. So that now, at the very top of our society, are these Protestant men who are Masons. They're basically a good group. They may have been misled by the fact that maybe 200 or 300 years ago, they started noticing that Christianity was not the only ethics-based religion. They noticed that, for instance, Hinduism was just as ethical as Christianity. And in a movement to try to be more accepting of the whole world, the Masons developed a concept called universalism, which meant that not only Christianity was an enlightened religion, but all religions who accepted an ethical God could be honored as ethical churches. So they created this theory called Universalist Church, Unitarian Church. And the Episcopals had a lot in common with the Unitarians. A lot of Episcopalians turned into Unitarians and vice versa. So yes, the Masons are Christians. They're hard-working, honest, Protestant work ethic people who were, in fact, at one time bricklayers. Masons meaning bricklayers. Now, understand that naturally in America, the elite would be made up of white Protestants, because this has been basically a white Protestant country, and it's not too odd, is it, that America's elites would be members of this club, which became so powerful when they sort of wrested their power away from the King of England and became somewhat independent by virtue of this union of bricklayers. When they noticed that they were not, that Christianity was not the only ethical religion, they had to accept the idea of a universal concept of God and sort of reach out to the other nations of the world in a kind of a Christian embracing of all ethical people. That led them to think that there should be a one world order. Why should we just stay isolated, they said? Why can't we, the Christians, the good people, the Buddhists, all of these ethical people, hold hands and make sense and order out of this world? So far, so good. The Masons were not pagans, they were Christians. The problem was that the Jews are not white Anglo-Saxon Protestants with orderly minds. The Jews are a psychotic race. They are paranoid schizophrenics with delusions of grandeur. And the only thing they really had in common with the Masons about 100 years ago was that the Jews were international in character. There were Jews in this country, Jews in that country, Jews in this country, Jews in that country. And the Jews, being this criminally insane mentality, were working to control the world, while the Freemasons were trying to figure out a way to create order out of the world. There's a big difference between wanting to control and enslave the world and wanting to enlighten the world with Christian principles. All the Masons were trying to do, you see, was to get the cannibals to stop cannibalizing each other and things like that. They thought they could spread the light of civilization. So the Jews, working sort of sidling up into the Masons and infiltrating the Masons, brought their criminally insane belief system with them and convinced the Masons that they were good guys too. They were ethical and they were international. Now, what made this work was that the Jews in all the countries were able to take all the gold from all of the banks in all the countries all over the world and send it to one bank, like, let's say, England. That way they could gain control of England. Then they would ship all the gold to France, and they would gain control of France. So what was happening was that the Jews, with their criminally insane mentality, were infiltrating the hard-working Protestant ethic Masons and perverted and distorted it so badly that now common people, low-class people, middle-class people, who just naturally hate the upper class, are willing to blame the upper-class Protestant people who worked hard to get where they were and deserve to be on the top of the society, and blaming them for the demonic handiwork of the Jews. No, the Masons are not devil worshippers. It is true that the little boys, the 19-year-olds, the 18-year-olds that go to college did join the Skull and Bone Society, and as young men will do, they always sit around with dark candles and go ooh-ha, ooh-ha, because they have no idea what to do with their sexual energy and their blossoming intellects, and this is just what they do. It does not mean that they were evil men. This is a misconception of the Masons. It's very low class to accuse the Masons of wrongdoing. The Masons are just the upper elite of America. Who else do you think is going to be at the top of American elite if not the white Anglo-Saxon? What's wrong with you? The white Anglo-Saxon Protestant is what created America, wrote the Constitution, lent the light of English Christianity to our country. Now, with all of the proliferation of democracy and low-class people and all of this rutting and sucking as a pathway to salvation, everyone's getting lost. Nobody holds the queen in reverence anymore. Nobody has any aspiration to be upper class anymore. If you do try to make something better of yourself, you're accused of having airs and being false and silly and stifling. This is all the Jewish mentality. The Jews are a lower middle class society of goat following creatures who have no class, no aspirations to be elite. They want to destroy the upper and middle class so that everyone can be poor like them. That's what they did in Russia. They got the lowest class of criminals to buddy up with the Khazarian Jews who were barefoot and put on black pants and black leather jackets and went about the business of murdering the middle class and the upper class of Russia. It's a loathsome belief system to stand in judgment of your betters and say they are evil because they're rich and clean. You should be aspiring to be better, not aspiring to be lower. The Masons are entirely racist. They didn't allow black people or Catholics or Mormons or anyone in the Masons until they were forced to by the Jews after the Second World War. Up until that time, Masons were exclusively white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And they were that way for good reason. Anyone with any common sense can look around and see that the nicest people are white Anglo-Saxon Masons. Now, the Catholics didn't like the Masons because the Masons didn't like them. The Calvinists didn't like the Masons because the Masons didn't like them. The Masons were an elite Church of England group of people. And they also drew membership from the upper class Christian societies, Christian churches. But they made fun of the fundamentalists. They were not Calvinists. They were not people who believed in too much self-discipline or too much self-denial. They were wealthy people who had good parties and a lot of fun. Their women were educated. They were free, white, and 21. It is not bigoted, narrow-minded, or prejudiced to recognize the obvious fact that the white race is by far the most superior race on the planet. It's simply a fact. When you recognize that the Masons wear funny clothes, you're starting to get a feeling for who the Masons are. They're a bunch of white Anglo-Saxon men who have meetings once a week to have a good time. And they do get very, very silly. They do it on purpose. They espouse high virtues, high morals. They look down on drinking. They look down on smoking, although they indulge in both because moderation is the key to everything. They have a good time. They like to get together without their wives, and they help each other out. One of the major rules is if any Mason asks any other Mason for a favor, they have to give it to them. And this is not an evil thing. It just means if some guy doesn't, if his refrigerator breaks down, another Mason has to give him a refrigerator. It's perfectly reasonable, decent society. To make fun of the Masons is the essence of hatred of white males, because that's what they are. They're a bunch of white guys getting together, having a good time, and anybody who thinks they're evil are just not fun people. The great mystery is, how did the Jews get into the Masons? It's absolutely astonishing how they infiltrated. The white Anglo-Saxon Protestant men hate Jews. I'm telling you, I know what I was taught by my own father at my own dinner table. They call them kikes. They won't have anything to do with them. They hate those dirty, stinking Jew kikes that steal and rob and cheat. How they got into the Masons, I don't know. I know that when I was a child in the 50s, my father told me there were no Jews allowed in the Masons. I know that that changed to the great chagrin of the Masons after the Second World War, when all of a sudden it was illegal in America for white men to exclusively associate with white men. And to their horror, they had to let in blacks and Catholics and Jews. Now, I do believe that the Jews managed somehow to infiltrate even as far back as 300 years ago. But I assure you it was infiltration perpetrated by the Jews on these unsuspecting, fun-loving, normal white men. And it's really a terrible shame and brings up a very valid point of discussion. How are the Masons going to get rid of the Jews so they can have a good time? They don't need those Zionist spies in their meetings. It brings down the whole community. Ernst Zundel was found guilty under an archaic law that made it illegal in Canada to report false news. This archaic law went back to the days of the older kings, who wouldn't allow any newspapers to say anything that wasn't approved by the king. That law was overturned thanks to Ernst Zundel's courageous fight with the Canadian authorities, who tried to incarcerate him under that law for writing the book, Did 6 Million Really Die? The Truth at Last. There's no excuse for having a law like that on the books of any civilized society. People have to have the right to think freely, to speak freely, to write freely. That's why our founding fathers gave us the First Amendment, because without the right to speak freely, you don't have the right to think freely. And without the right to think, you don't have the right to invent or progress. Ernst Zundel is an extremely important person in today's political world, because he is a genuine political prisoner of the American Zionist organized government. Ernst Zundel, this man who wrote Did 6 Million Really Die? The Truth at Last, he published it, he didn't write it, was incarcerated by Canada for having reported false news, an archaic law which he successfully had struck down by going to Canada's Supreme Court, thus giving to Canada something more like the freedom of speech that Americans have always enjoyed under the First Amendment. Then Ernst Zundel, who was really tired of Canada because of all the persecution he'd suffered at the hands of the authorities, including having his house burned down, came to America to live with his wife and lived here for about 15 years peacefully in Virginia. Shortly after 9/11, Michael Chertoff, a Zionist Jew appointed to head the Homeland Security Department. If you'll recall, he shut down the investigation into 9/11, sent 3 cells of spies, Israeli spies, to Israel without any arrest or conviction for spying, which I believe is a capital crime. One of these spy rings being 200 strong in California. He sent squad cars to Ernst Zundel's house and trumped up some phony charges that Ernst Zundel had missed an immigration hearing, which isn't even true. If there was such a hearing, Ernst Zundel was never given notice of it. And besides, we don't get rid of people for missing an immigration hearing. We don't even get rid of people for coming into the country illegally at the rate of 1 million a year. So this was clearly a trumped up charge pointing at a political prisoner, and he was in fact deported from the United States for 20 years. That was his punishment for failing to make an appearance at an immigration hearing which never existed. Now you've got to look at this political crime and the political punishment. The crime clearly was that he was pointing to Israel, saying Israel is causing America's problems. He was one of the loudest voices that said, Watch out for Israel now that we've been attacked in 9/11, because if you don't be careful, Israel is going to use Israel's influence over the American government to put the Israeli harness around the American military and make us go to war for the Israelis. And his punishment for making this honest statement was that he was deported to Canada, where he's been in solitary confinement for a year. This tells you what the government does not want you to know, which is that Israel is forcing us to go to war against Iraq. The penny drops when you realize that America has had technology to remotely target planes with the wingspan of a Boeing 937 into buildings. This technology is called Global Hawk. And once you realize we have this technology, that our government has lied to us and told us we do not have this technology, suddenly you understand how an operation like 9/11 could succeed. Four planes guided by Global Hawk technology took off from four different locations and attacked four different targets. There were no need for box cutters, plastic knives, or anything else. The passengers on board would not need to or be tempted to take over a pilot because these planes had no pilots. They were being guided by Global Hawk technology. Thank you for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen, to this evening's edition of The Hola Hoax. Same time, same station.